Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I am deeply grateful you chose to be with me on this beautiful March 17th, 2018 day. We're going to be looking at impermanence and what it might mean. I gathered three questions. It took a long time to get these questions, but nevertheless, I got them, and I'm very, very grateful that they're here, and we're going to talk a little bit about impermanence. And again, I want to remind you that you're listening to this radio program and watching my TV programs via the kind and loving graces of, my sponsors who make all of this possible. Without their support, without them being here, without their loving kindness, we would not be together right now. And I want to thank them for their kindness, and I hope that you will consider becoming a sponsor. To become a sponsor simply means that you support the program. You can do it as little as $25 a month or even $50 a quarter. That's our lowest amount, four times a year. That's $200 a year. That helps everything. That makes quite a difference in our budget. So we would be deeply grateful for your kindness. Really, we would. And for your donation, you will get the message of the month. You will get access to my podcast, video cast, commentaries, 122 discourses I did over the years on my TV programs, including the Gibran series that is showing right now. It's a beautiful series, Living the Life. And if you go to the website at aspire.org, you can go and look at those programs. We're letting them out one by one. There'll be a series of eight. And right now, I think there's two or three, and there'll be more. And you will get all the discourses that went along with that. I always went into the studio and made different discourses than the ones I spoke of on the television program. I went into more depth. So you get all of that and much, much more. Honestly, you will. It's a rich and wonderful experience to give, and it's a rich and wonderful experience for me to give back to you. And you will be supporting this radio program, TV programs, and serving humankind in the most unique way. It's about teaching a man how to fish and not just giving them a fish. So if you understand that metaphorically, it's very important. Go to the website if you care to see, at aspire.org, aspire.org, and there in the center you will see support. If you click on that, a drop-down menu will ensue, and you can look at why support Aspire, that page, and it will tell you everything you need to know and get you started. I am grateful that you care enough to even take a look at that page. Really, I am. Impermanence. It is one, according to the dictionary, is one of essential documents and parts of Buddhism. Well, I agree with that. I think that's very true. But what does it mean? And what is it all about? It's a doctrine, according to the dictionary, that asserts that all conditioned existence without exception is transcendent and inconsistent. It's temporal. And this goes to material, mental, and physical objects, change of condition, the decline and eventual deterioration or destruction of it. The concept of impermanence is also found in various schools of Hinduism, Jainism, and that's all I'm going to read to you on that from the dictionary, because I have a little more insight. So I thought it would be interesting for us, since we're subject to this law of impermanence, to take a look at it. First question, well, it's really simple, from a man named Jack. He does not tell me where he lives. Some background, just a little background on Jack. He is a sponsor, and he reads the commentaries, and I talk about impermanence in the commentaries, and I even did a whole commentary on impermanence, and evidently I didn't do a good job. He said, please explain more about impermanence. It seems rather frightening. I hope he read it. I do. If he read it, he would understand it more. Jack, take some time to look that up. It's right there on the internet, on the website, under commentaries, and you'll find it, I'm sure. But let's talk about it, because it's interesting. When I was a child, I thought everything would last forever. I really did. I thought everything was going to last forever. It didn't matter what you had, your objects, your things would last forever. And then one day I realized, after looking at some of my toys, that some of my objects, my toys, were starting to disintegrate. And I was one of those people, forgive me, that would play with a toy and really enjoy it. And usually they were creative toys, puppets, things like that. And I would notice the string would break for no reason at all on the marionette or on the ventriloquist dummy, the mouth part where you would, you know, press on it and pull the string and the mouth would open and shut. And I became very confused about it. And so, I mean, I wasn't doing anything abnormal with these things. I was playing with them, having a good time. And I went to my my mother, you know, the source of all stupidity, and I said, you know, why is the string breaking on my puppets and on my ventriloquist doll? And why is it that my toys, and I had very few, I didn't have a lot of stuff, Why are they looking like this? And I would show her, and she would say, they're wearing out. And I thought, how is it they would wear out? I don't get it. You know, I'm not a very bright person. And she said, everything wears out, even human beings wear out. And I looked at her, and I said, what do you mean? She said, well, your grandmother and grandfather didn't always look the way they look now. They're wearing out. And I said, well, why? And she said, time makes things wear out. Well, that wasn't true at all, but that's what the common thought was. That was the common explanation, that time did it. And still, a lot of people think that time wears things out. Well, that troubled me to no end, I have to tell you. And I asked her, I said, am I going to wear out? And she said, yes, you one day will wear out. And I said, will I die one day? And she said, yes, one day you will die. Now, that scared the living you-know-what out of me. I can't tell you why, but it did. It was a shock to me. I was probably 8 years old when I got this little bit of information. I went to my Unity minister at the time, Wendell Mixon, and I asked him, you know, am I going to wear out, you know, blah, blah. And he said, oh, yes, it's going to happen. I was profoundly troubled. It's impermanence that I was facing. And everybody faces impermanence in one way or another. This troubled me to no end because I wanted to find out why this happened and if there was a way to stop it. Of course, when you're little, that's the way you think. And so, Jack, what happened for me was I didn't know what wore me out. I didn't know that my concern about this phenomenon was going to set into motion a lot of things in my life. So what happened was a lot of things got set into my life, including me being kind of esoteric at a very young age and thinking about the process of birth and death and what that was all about and why. I would be playing with the kids when I was little, Jack, and all of a sudden this whole thing would crop up within me about dying, wearing out. And I would just, you know, kind of slip away from whatever we were playing and go sit in my little magic fort that I had made in the garage. It was my little hiding place. And just sit there and wonder, why? Why? So impermanence, how do you explain it? I'm going to tell you why it occurs and what I have found out when I was living in India, and also that what the Tibetans taught us about it. And I find it to be very true. There is no such thing as time like people would like you to believe there is. And, you know, it is something that is debatable, I am sure, but I don't debate. When I find a basic truth, I just go for it, and that's the end of that. So, with all of that in mind, the Tibetans, and whether I really knew it or not, this whole quest of why this happened sent me to India, sent me into being a teacher, set me into the ministry, the whole deal. It just thrusted me into everything that I'm doing currently, even right now. So this isn't some new idea I had or whatever. I wanted to know why. I was a why guy. So here's the gist of it. We live in an atmosphere here on Earth that has not only atmospheres to allow us to breathe and live here on Earth, but there is this thing that we created called the collective unconscious. This is the culmination of everybody's kind of energy formulating an atmosphere around the Earth. This atmosphere is not always healthy. It's not always kind. It's at times like sandpaper, and at other times it's like a buzzsaw. And it just sandpapers and buzzsaws all around us all the time, every single moment of our life. And the more we participate in this collective unconscious, which is based in fear, what the Buddhism calls the dukkha, the suffering, the pain, the dissatisfaction of life, the more we find that our bodies are subject to that. We live in a very interesting world where we do not coordinate with the world at all. We do not harmonize with the laws and the principles of this world that go to make up our livingness. We just don't do it. We don't care to do it. We don't want to do it. We don't see any reason to do it. But this is the way we are. When we don't coordinate ourselves and harmonize, blend with the laws that are present here on Earth, and I did two commentaries that will be showing up here in the near future on the laws that are the basic principles of this lifetime and where we live. And you can read them if you're a subscriber or you're a sponsor. If you and I live in them, we harmonize with this world. We harmonize with life. We're no longer fighting it anymore. In fact, what we are doing is we are coordinating with it. We are becoming one with it. And that removes us ever so slightly from the collective unconscious. Now, no one avoids it because it is a part of this world. Buddha, Gautama Buddha, died. He died of, poisoning himself, but it was basically he died of neglect. He died of old age. He was getting very old. Jesus, you know that story. All persons who have physical bodies are subject to the impermanence of life here on Earth, and that's just the way it is. That's part of the law that is. This may not sound satisfactory to you, Jack, but it is the way it is. Hence, We have karma in our collective unconscious. We have the whole experience of what we've been, what we've done, where we've gone, how we've been, the whole experience of our entire lifetimes. How many we've had, I cannot tell you, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And all of them culminate into a place of impermanence within us, where we change, where we wear out. And that's what wears on us, not time. It is the collective unconscious that wears on us and wears on us. And then our participation in it unconsciously. In our subconscious mind, our unconscious mind, we are participating in all sorts of things. All sorts of things that we don't know we're participating in. Hate, fear, anger. And then there's the stuff we bring with us. Hate, fear, and anger from a past life. And all of this exists within us as the way we live. And once you understand this, then you understand the nature of what it is to be in a world, in a body, in a lifetime of impermanence. I hope that helps you. Meditation, inner work, is not about elongating your life. Your life, my life, is already, so to speak, predestined, as it were. The way we are, the how we live our life, how we think, everything is really already manufactured for us because we don't meditate, because we don't see the bigger picture. We're not interested in transcendence. But for those of us who are interested in transcendence, we don't fight this process of impermanence. We use it as a part of our transcendence. And that's the key to it all, which is something that people have a great deal of difficulty with. I hope that helps you, Jack. I spent a lot of time on it, and I need to stop beating the dead horse, as it were, here. So if you have any more questions, always feel free to call me. You know how to get in touch. I would love to hear from you. Please forgive me. Namaste. The next question comes from Gail in Washington. She says, if everything dies due to impermanence, and what you're saying is true, why do anything? Life is pointless. Gail, life is not pointless. And just because things are born, rise, and die doesn't make it pointless. There's something about the process that is very, very important to us. Very important. It has to do with the way of the heart. It has to do with cultivating the way of the heart. Most people just live their life according to their own rules and their own beliefs, and they never see the bigger picture of why they are here and what this whole thing is all about. So they never really realize the beauty of their own existence. But it is there. And to live a life without realizing and finding the essential beauty of your life and my life is only to repeat it again and again and again. We waste our lives. Our lives aren't pointless. We just don't want to get the point of our life. We want a quiet, easy, or exciting and vibrant life experience where everything is happening and amusing us and pandering us and making us feel good about ourselves and all sorts of things. We want all sorts of experiences and all of them pleasurable. But we don't realize that living for pleasure and pleasure alone causes us to live in a way which is very unkind and basically very cruel. We become distant from our heart, our authentic heart, and we become distant from the meaning of our life, the substance of our life. There is a point to everything. Just because we wear out or die doesn't mean this is a pointless life. Learning how to care for things, to care for your pet, your dog, your whatever, your cat, whatever you have. Learning to care for it, even though you know it is eventually going to leave this earth and die. There is something to be gained and to be deeply learned by that. There's something to be learned about vacuuming your house, cleaning your toilets. Something to be learned about fixing things, about talking to people, about last-minute changes in whatever plans you have and being able to adapt to those changes without feeling contempt or anger or hostility. Everything has meaning. Everything has purpose. Everything is leading you to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing that is leading us to transcendence, to transcend our ego, our vanity, our pride, even our human body. That's what it's all about. And to miss any of that or all of that is a very foolish thing to do. And most of us do it in a way which is very cavalier to our spiritual existence. Spirituality is a direct experience. It is not philosophical. It is not religious. It is the ability to have the direct experience with a quality of life that our mind can't calculate. It can't even cope with it. It has no ability to reconcile with the infinite way of love that lives within us. And when you say love to people, you're opening up a Pandora's box because everybody thinks that love is some kind of mushy emotional thing when it's not at all. It has nothing to do with emotionality. Love is the basis of all life, and it is what living is all about. It is the basis of all things that are important. So when you start thinking about the pointlessness of life due to death, you have to understand there is more to this world than the physical life we are living. There is more to this life than the physicality, the emotionality, the psychology of it all. Those three things cannot comprehend love and the meaning of life. They can't comprehend it at all. So they miss. And they make up their own story, their own world, their own value system, their own philosophy, their own rules that negate the basic premise of what it means to live in a constant love. A love that is deeply significant. So there you are. Pointless? There's nothing pointless about this life. What a blessing to be here. What a blessing to know the meaning and the existence of this life. You belong to something in this world that is deeply intelligent. Now, when I say intelligent, I'm talking about the merging of love with a basic ability to have the comprehension of what that love means. That's intelligence, the comprehension of what love means and how it works in ourselves and in our world and in our life. And most people are not interested in that kind of intelligence. They want the Hawking kind of intelligence. But there's more to intelligence than all of that. It is about the quality of a great love that lives within you. And when you're more interested in love than you are, in how smart you are, how clever you are, or whatever your stories might be about the meaning and significance of life, that is when something of the other shore can reach you and really take care of you. You and I live in wonder. The person who most is able to live in the wonder of their life finds the meaning and the significance of their living to be absolutely magnificent. And I'm very grateful for your question, Gail. I hope I helped you. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste. Okay, that's it for today. We'll be back on the air tomorrow. And I'm very grateful I got to do this one on impermanence. Please forgive me, huh? Namaste.